Welcome back to East Meets West with me, Olga Bataman.
I'm Tara Reid. I want to put out a shout out, a thank you, because we now have double the subscribers on
X. Thank you, the audience. And, we're not working in vain.
Thank you, yes. So thank you for everyone who's watching, and thank you also for defending me on X when I got into that very public fight with Laura Loomer, who was attacking Tucker Carlson. I'm a big believer in free speech, and I think it's really horrible that you know that the DOJ might be going after a journalist.
Is there anything left of the free speech, I wonder?
I know, that is the question. And one of the things that came up was someone was asking about you, Olga. They were asking, and they want to know a little bit more.
Okay.
So they know that we wanted to give a Russian-American perspective, but they wanted to hear a little bit about you and where you're from.
Like, who am I, right?
Right. I think there was even, it was floated out there, you might look Swedish or Norwegian. And I was like, she's Russian.
No, I'm 100% Russian.
Yeah,
I'm Moscovite, 100% Moscovite.
There you go.
Furthermore. So, but I mean, I'm not too much into monologues.
Did you grow up in Moscow?
Yeah, I grew up in Moscow. Both of my parents were also born in Moscow. My grannies as well. So I'm 100% Moscovite. And I started at the Moscow University for International Relations, MGIMO, that actually trains diplomats. So this first step in my career was I was a diplomat. I was an attaché at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
Wow.
And, you know, my dream actually was when I chose this path back then when I was a teen, my dream was to eliminate wars. So I wanted to work at the UN, not just Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs. I wanted to work at the UN to put an end to wars. I mean, that was really very naive of mine, honestly. I was very naive when I was a kid.
It's a beautiful wish, though.
So, you know, I was growing up, I was studying international relations and the situation in Yugoslavia. The war in Yugoslavia was just unfolding in front of my eyes simultaneously. So, you know, this disillusion, it just fell on me like a huge and heavy snowball, you know,
at
once. Mm-hmm. And back then, throughout the university years, I was dating a guy, like for 4 or 5 years, whose father was a consular at Russian embassy in Serbia, back then, like in Yugoslavia. Mm-hmm. So can you imagine, like, I got this information firsthand, and I wish I was smarter, but I was a teen once again, so I think I could get, like, more information. Mm-hmm. But it was, you cannot imagine, that was such a disillusion. Because I honestly was believing that after the Second World War, you know, because in Russia, in the Soviet Union, there was not a single family that wouldn't have lost family members. In my family, all of the male population was like killed, either in the battle for Moscow or other battles. They were all killed. Everyone above the age of 17, not even 18, they were all killed. You know, those remaining were only like the very young, the toddlers. You know,
right.
So you can imagine. For us, it was an open injury, so to say.
Yeah.
You know,
open
so we couldn't imagine how, like, going through that, people can still think of fighting. You know, but that was my very naive belief back then. So that's why I wanted to go to the UN. I actually was believing in this institution to prevent more wars on the planet Earth. And then, can you imagine, like, the U.S. and NATO troops bombing Yugoslavia just in the middle of the day, you know, and they were bombing schools, they were bombing bridges.
Yes.
So that was all
unfolding, was doing this,
unfolding in front of my eyes. Mm-hmm. So, I worked for the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs for a while. I left it for family reasons because, you know, the system was not still fit for women a bit because, you know, it's with the, if you have a husband, it was a bit complicated.
Right.
And for 17 years, working on RT. So it's like the same international relations, just from the angle of covering them in the media. So I'm kind of remaining in the same field, in the same path. I chose back then, but like from the media side. So that's that. I think it's too much talking on me, but that's my story.
I really like that you share that, because our audience really wanted to know a little bit more depth of what we're doing. And I think Americans in particular, not just Europeans, but Americans in particular, forget that, you know, Russians lost 27 million people.
There is not a single family, just believe me, not a single family that wouldn't have lost a family member or two or many more. I mean, when the Second World War started, my granny, the father had already passed away, but they lost all of the elder brothers. Because straight away they went to the front line, of course. Right. And like even my granny, she was digging the trenches at the age of 13, 14. You can imagine. Yeah. So like the whole country from the age of, I don't know, 10 was taking part in, you know, in the war, in resistance, in any way they could. Right. So for us, it was really hard to imagine. I mean, back then I didn't know that the Cold War already started while the Second World War was yet going on, you know? But back then I didn't know that. Right. I honestly thought that after going through this, humanity is eager to put end to wars on the planet Earth. Then the disillusion came, so.
Well,
with information.
I'm glad that you still continued your career in geopolitics, although it's this way, but I think in a way, it's more powerful because now your voice can be heard too as a Russian, and with this historical knowledge. And, you know, and that, you know, speaking of wars, America has been the most aggressive, unfortunately, with all the wars and coup changes.
Even
right?
the president, who was eager to get a Nobel Peace Prize,
right.
you know,
Trump,
launched so many wars. Yes. And now this octopus, as we discussed it with you, with so many legs, all of the legs seem got stuck, you know, in the wars all over the world. So.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it, an octopus. And one of the things that's confusing people, too, is how did we get in this war? From the American point of view, there was a social media post by Trump in the middle of the night saying we're bombing Iran. And so it was really shocking to American citizens.
Is there now, any formality in your country needed to launch a war? I don't know much about the formalities needed, you know, in Congress, or how does it work in your country? Like, how can a war be launched?
Well, actually, we have a guest with us who knows a great deal about this. She's a former congresswoman.
Oh, cool.
And it's her birthday.
Whoa.
So I want to make sure and bring that up. But Cynthia McKinney is a former congresswoman. She's traveled globally to all different countries, being a international election observer. She's been a professor, and she resides globally, I would say, all over the world. But she was a representative in Georgia, which is a state, not the country, the state in the United States. And so without further ado, welcome, Cynthia McKinney. It's good to have you.
Well, thank you so much, Tara and Olga, for having me on.
Thank you so much for being with us, Cynthia.
East meets West. That's a wonderful title, because in the West, we don't get the Eastern perspective. You know, it's all about the West. So this is wonderful that you're providing us, as well as the Russians, with this perspective that is more global than what we normally get over here. So you're talking about the executive powers of the presidency to launch a war. And there was a debate that took place in Congress over the War Powers Act, because Congress enacted the War Powers Act just specifically to prevent presidents from usurping congressional authority, constitutional authority, I might add, in the declaration of war. And so what you had was presidents that were actually carrying out acts of war without a congressional designation. And so how can the War Powers Act fail? Well, it failed during the debate, and the war continue. Well, what happens is Congress also has power of the purse. And the Supreme Court has ruled that if Congress appropriates the money for the war, then it's okay. And so you don't have to have this formal declaration. All you need is 418 members of the House and 70 some odd members of the Senate to say, okay, we're going to pass this authorization and this appropriation.
So it's just, we grab the money, then it's okay, and we go for it, right?
That's right. Well, you know, in the United States, money rules, right? So you can,
weird,
you can have a war in everything. You certainly have a war in terms of the munitions expended. You have a war in terms of the soldiers that are being maimed or dying. You have a war in terms of the children who are being affected. So in all respects, we are at war, but we're not at war.
Mm. Cynthia, but can I ask you, because from what's going on now, it seems that Trump didn't foresee, that he couldn't even foresee that Iran would fire back, that anything would ever happen in the Strait of Hormuz, that there would be any consequences of what not just the United States, but the world is facing now, the oil prices and all of that. So, I mean, can it really happen that the head of state didn't foresee even the nearest, the soonest consequence, the next step?
I think there were people inside the administration probably who understood that this was a possibility, but it was overlooked. And I think what you've had in the United States over the passage of time is, even though our government is established in such a way that we have separation of powers and we have checks and balances and we have a federal set up so that you have many nodes of power in multiple jurisdictions or even in one jurisdiction. So when you explain the setup of the government so that all of this was designed by the founding fathers to make sure that the government didn't get too much power over the people. But what we've had over time is the centralization of the control of these aspects of the government, of these functions of the government. So in the midst of, Russia is a federal state as well. So in the midst of this kind of federalization, you've got centralization, which is not supposed to happen. That's the situation in the United States. So now, can the leaders of the U.S. imagine decentralization of authority and power in a war, which is what we're seeing in Iran? They probably can't, because what we've experienced is the opposite of this kind of decentralization that Iran has enacted, so that decapitation does not lead to the collapse of the state.
Cynthia, but it seems that now not only like the country is split between like the Republicans, the Democrats, which is a normal thing, but it seems the administration, which should be the concentration, so to say, of the Republican Party, is also split in itself. Like even the administration, from what I heard, J.D. Vance, that I still call J.D. Vance.
Yeah.
I mean, it's splitting into that. So even he's very skeptical about the presidential decision, and he's vice president. So he's like number two in the country. So, I mean, there is no consensus even within the presidential administration. So what may this schism mean for the country?
Well, I say that politics in the United States has turned upside down. And I am known as an extreme left person on the left side of the political ideological spectrum. But what I say is that I'm so far left that I'm right now. And so what you will find is that this split, as you talk about it in the Republican Party, is basically these old line silk stocking Republicans that were, you know, sort of leftovers from the old Republicans of the day that were, you know, had the corporate ties and that sort of thing. And now what you have are these working class, blue collar, anti-war, and let me just say, I would call them critical thinkers, because my friends now who are more anti-war than anything on the so-called Democratic left, they're Republicans, and they're MAGA Republicans, Make America Great Again Republicans. Right. So the Make America Great Again Republicans are sick and tired of these wars. And just to put it in perspective, while all of my life, Russia has been commemorating the Great Patriotic War. And as you have said, every family was touched by that war. Well, in the United States, every day, every hour, every second of my life, my country has been bombing somebody.
True, very true.
But Cynthia, then the natural question arises, is there, I mean, for an average US citizen, does it matter for whom they vote? Because they end up in the contrary. Like, you know, those who are voting for America First, you know, concentrating on domestic affairs, you know, on the social being of the citizens, maybe of medical care, you know, all of those essential, I would say, issues for ordinary people. And then they end up in their leader that they kind of elected in an indirect way, you know, this long path of election. But then he's doing the opposite, because he's not focusing on domestic affairs, but he's, as we discussed it, as an octopus putting his legs all over the world and bombing, like there was Venezuela operation, there was this Middle East mass, I wouldn't even call it an operation, a Middle East mass. Yeah. And then they're also discussing putting a foot on Cuba that's already unfolding.
Cuba. Yeah, Cuba's next, yeah. What is your thoughts on poor American voters right now? Because I mean, I'm kind of seeing the same things. They're really right now, you're seeing in the media, I mentioned at the top of the hour, Loomer, right? Bragging about turning in certain Republicans or that aren't being loyal to the president because they're talking back about Iran and not wanting the war. Tucker Carlson went and in person and talked to Trump to convince him not to go in the war. Charlie Kirk, who was murdered, was trying to convince Trump not to do this war. But yet Trump ran on the platform that there would be no endless wars. What is your thought for the American voters, and as, especially as a former politician yourself who ran on a platform? Did Trump keep any of his promises?
Well, we shouldn't be surprised that he didn't keep the promises, because Trump doesn't, at the end of the day, you know that Trump doesn't make the decisions. His donors make the decisions. And so you've got the number one donor in the Democrat side, whose name is Haim Saban. And his number one issue is anything that Israel wants, the United States is going to make sure it gets it. The number one donor on the Republican side is Miriam Adelson. Her number one issue is anything that Israel wants, then Israel's going to get it. So now comes your question about, does it really make a difference? No, it doesn't make a difference. Whether you vote Democrat or whether you vote Republican doesn't make a difference, because they all answer to the same people. One
Israel.
Of the exercises I would take my students through is I would just draw like an oval on the board, and then I would draw little circles around the oval, and then I would have one big triangular point at the edge, or maybe you would say the top of one of the ovals. Of the oval. And I'd ask my students, what does that look like? And of course, you get all kinds of, you know, because I can't reproduce very well. I'm not an artist by any stretch of the imagination. And eventually, though, some student would say, that's men sitting around the table. And that is exactly what I'm trying to depict. And then I would tell them, this is the way political decisions are made. Usually it's a bunch of men sitting around the table, and the one that is sitting in the triangular area, that's the spokesperson for the day for that particular issue. So if we look at COVID, and then we say, okay, who was sitting in that table, in that that triangular? That was the WHO guy, I think he's Eritrean. That guy, he was like the face of COVID.
Right, right. World Health
you
Organization.
Look at, and then you say, okay, let's see if we can name the individuals who are at that table. Then you shift over to another issue, say the matter of war, U.S. participation in wars, and who's sitting around that table and who's the face there. Then what you do, what I told my students to do, was to look at another international issue and then tell me who the faces are around that table, and are there any faces that are the same around the COVID table, around the war table, around that. Then now you're getting to an approximation of the individuals who constitute the global deep state. And then that's how we can recognize where we need to aim our artillery so we can take the metaphorical political shots across the bow.
I see. So what you're seeing, like, isn't just a division of MAGA versus the neocons when you look at the Republican Party, what's happening. So like Laura Loomer going after Tucker Carlson, trying to get him arrested, right? I saw this, and I could be wrong, I saw this that the presidential administration was worried because Tucker is so popular that he might run for power, and if he did, he'd win. And his agenda is very different than the shadow government, right? He's exposing it. So I thought that they're trying to get him arrested. They're trying to silence speech. They're trying to silence Megyn Kelly. Charlie Kirk has been murdered in front of our faces. And there's still not a clear investigation into that. But right before he died, there was a meeting in the Hamptons where they were hammering him and threatening him. And he went directly to Tucker Carlson's house after that meeting, talking about how threatened and how scared he was. And then a couple days later, he was dead. So they're not joking. They're not joking about their agenda. So Americans are feeling, and the way they're covering up the Epstein files, my sense of it is Americans are feeling helpless, right? They're feeling scared. If they're taking out the people that are trying to raise awareness, what do we do? What are your thoughts on this as a former politician and a spokesperson yourself?
And if I may just add, it seems that as of now, where are those Americans who would support the president in what he's doing? Are there any? So can something be done? I don't know. I mean, now I see these discussions about impeachment, for example. I don't know. Is it any realistic? So, I mean, can anything be done in practicality?
Well, I think that's why, for me, while we're talking about the injustice around the war, the presence of U.S. Soldiers all over the planet in military bases, so strong away, limiting the sovereignty of so-called allies and all other states as well. So we look at this entire agenda and we're focusing on just this one little aspect that we are able to see right now being carried out. But this is sort of the way of the West. It's the way the United States has created the world, and it's not just the U.S., but it's the U.S. in conjunction with the U.K., in conjunction with Western Europe. This is the way they've constructed the world. So how can we get out of this? I think on the one hand, I remain hopeful that we can sort of vote our ways ourselves out of this, but I don't think ultimately that that's going to work, because we need more engagement of the people of the U.S. I mean, the right. people of the U.S. are, you know, working two jobs and they're trying to make sure they have gasoline so they can get to work make sure they have natural gas so that they can cook the food. So, you know, that and I get that. I understand that. But there are a few of us who must act fearlessly. And I think there's a few more of us. 30 years ago, I was like, you know, by myself. But now, you know, in fact, 30 years ago, Tucker Carlson was criticizing me. And now Tucker Carlson is saying exactly what I said 30 years ago. But now, you know, it's all you.
See how it all changes, you know,
that was
around
30 years ago. Right. Yeah. And so now, in terms of who's going to follow, I would very much like to see a Thomas Massie. I mean, yes. I wouldn't go to Tucker Carlson. I'd go to somebody who got in that swamp and who has been fighting that swamp. Not the swamp monsters that Trump always seems to be able to find, but this guy is a swamp warrior, Thomas Massie. So I would love to see Thomas Massie running as an independent. And I would get out and I would work 24/7 to make sure that as an independent, he was on the ballot and was able to take his message across the United States.
I have another question for you. What about this solution? What about making AIPAC, which is the Israeli lobby funding source, right? The 90% of Congress gets money from them, right? What if they have to register as a foreign agent?
Well, you know, that goes back to JFK in 1963, yeah. November 22nd.
Never, we know how that ended.
They never registered after that assassination. So for those of you who might not be so aware of that whole history of the JFK assassination, but the bottom line is that JFK was determined that Israel would not become a nuclear state. And he was demanding inspectors go to Dimona, which is the site of Israel's nuclear labs. Mm-hmm. And he also was demanding that the Zionist Organization of America at that time, whatever the predecessor organization to AIPAC was back then, he was demanding that they register as a foreign agent. And of course, with a JFK's murder, then the nuclear program continued in Israel, and there was no pressure at all to limit oneself, to sign the Nuclear Proliferation Treaty. There was no more pressure at all. And now we get a situation where the tail actually is wagging the dog. Yeah. But I think the centrality of everything in terms of the political divide, the you know, fake left versus right, fake Democrat versus Republican, that whole schism, or, you know, manufactured schism, is blown wide open with the Epstein files. And so right. I want to do a podcast. Actually, I'm going to try and start it in April. And I want to focus on the Epstein files systematically, thoroughly, and deeply.
Good.
With annotations to explain what this actually means in the political reality of the reader.
So I cannot think of anyone better. You are a professor and an educator. You will be good at this. You will
those
be good.
Those Epstein files demonstrate that there is no left or right.
Right.
Right? They demonstrate that because they were all engaged in the same activities. They were all pursued by the same people. And I can tell you that there's one book on Capitol Hill that the newly elected members of Congress are given. It doesn't matter if you are Democrat or Republican. It doesn't matter if you're old school or new school. Everybody gets that book. What is that book? It's the donor book. So Democrats are calling the same people that the Republicans are calling.
This division
or so-called division is a mirage. It's not real. It's a chimera. I mean, you know, it's everything except what, and only the people at the very bottom mm-hmm. are able to see the, are not able to see that they're the mm-hmm. same. But once you get closer to the top, you can see that they're both the same. So I want to demonstrate this to the average person in the United States or wherever else through the Epstein files. And then we will find out exactly how U.S. policy has been made and who maybe those people around that table are.
Well, we know one name for sure, because Jeffrey Epstein himself said he worked for them. That's the Rothschild family. And to President Putin, credit, you know, back in when he came into power, he went after the oligarchs. Remember that? That were basically skimming yes. off of Russia's, right? You can speak more to this. And he was like, everybody out of the pool. And it was all the Rothschilds oligarchs. I mean, you can speak more to this.
I want to shift gears a little bit.
Yeah, okay.
So, I mean, you were speaking about inside the country, about the inside the United States.
Right, but I'm saying that Russia kicked out the Rothschild money, the banking system.
Yeah, I mean, all of them, yeah. all of them, like, sucking the resources yeah. and everything from the
Western
country.
Western,
yeah. But what I want to say is maybe the solution may come from abroad, because ironically, you know, United States, it seems, that initiated all that partly to contain China, but United States is massively dependent on China, on rare earth materials, mm-hmm. to manufacture all of those military equipment, all of those bombs and everything, the wall frame and all of that. They're dependent on China on that, and Israel is dependent on the United States on that as well. So what President Putin initiated, like back then, with mm-hmm. the BRICS system, I mean mm-hmm. the family of countries, the China, India, and everything. So maybe the solution can come from abroad.
Ah,
you know, because they cannot carry out the policies that they're forced to mm-hmm. by the deep state, as you put it, whatever you call it. But to do that, you have to cooperate with China, you know? And if you're mm-hmm. trying to contain it with what's going on in the Middle East, and I mean, I think that's why the Trump's visit to China was postponed, just postponed, because he was planning to go there in the beginning of April, mm-hmm. and that was postponed for a month, because he's nothing to bring to China now, you know? He's hurting the country with one yeah. hand, and he's heavily dependent on it.
Yes.
So maybe it's, you know, I'm proud of my president. Maybe he's like, yeah. thinks many steps forward. So
President Putin is very good. What do you think on that?
I have a long question.
Well,
BRICS.
Of course, I had just been to, at that time, it was the Soviet Union. I went there, actually, I went there twice, but just before the fall. So what would that have been, 1990 or so? Mm-hmm. And I have always been keenly interested in Russia. Even when I was in high school, I was interested in Russia. So you could call me a sort of a natural born Russophile from the U.S. Oh. yeah. And so when the Soviet Union, quote unquote, fell, I was paying a little bit more attention to what was going on than sort of the average person in the U.S. And basically what I saw was a criminal cabal from the United States aiding and abetting in the theft of the patrimony of the people of Russia and you know, and the other related states. And the creation of these oligarchs was totally done at the expense of the Russian people, who should have had retained state ownership of those enterprises. But instead, you know, the devaluation of the tokens or whatever it was that they were giving to each Russian citizen.
Vouchers, we call them vouchers.
As a result of that, and then as a result of that, the oligarchs are able to utilize money from the United States and then purchase all of these enterprises and then lay off all the people and stop paying the people. So it was born in corruption. It was born in criminal activity. And so I'm happy now that this disinfection process perhaps maybe has already matured. I don't know what the remnants are of the oligarchs.
That's what the president did. He nationalized it back.
What was his main goal?
Well,
then kicked out the Westerners. Course, yeah.
Then the next thing is freeing yourself of the contaminated food. Food in Russia is organic. I just came back not too very long ago, and it's just, you know, everything is just amazing. And then I come here. I just happen to be visiting U.S. right now, so I'm at home. And, you know, you have to read the label on everything, and half of the stuff that you pick up isn't even real. It's a bunch of chemicals all put together to look like a cookie. And it's got me, a cookie is just supposed to have flour and sugar and, you know, whatever. But it's got all this other stuff that you can't read. And so, you know, I'm sorry, but everybody needs to have their own little garden here. What the United States has become is what Russian people need to guard against. Russia must not become what the United States is.
Well put.
Everything in the U.S. is somebody's profit center, and it's not the people of the U.S. that are making money. So you're constantly ill because the illness is a profit center. Disease is a profit center. Synthetic food is a profit center. And the synthetic food, of course, makes you ill, which helps Big Pharma, which is invested in the agriculture, the bad agriculture. So, I mean, it's circular. It literally is those men, mostly men, sitting around that table, making decisions on basically who's going to live, who's going to die, who's going to be at war, who's da 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 da, ad infinitum until we stop them.
But for our viewers, to sum it up and to put it a bit on the ground, how do you think that would all develop? Because, I mean, the mess he created voluntaristically, I would say, in the Middle East, the schism that we envisage in the establishment and in the country as a whole, U.S. citizens facing soaring oil prices, you know. Just the other day, we interviewed Minister of Foreign Affairs of Kenya, and the country is envisaging consequences of the fertilizers price going up, you know, because of what's going on in the in the Strait of Hormuz. So the consequences are global, I have to admit. So as for you, how will it all unfold? How will it all develop in the foreseeable future? Because the elections are just approaching in a couple of months, right?
Right, the midterms.
Midterms. So yeah. How will it all develop as for you?
Okay, well, I'd like to take it away from Trump at this point, because these problems weren't just created in the last few years, right? So let's separate this from what's happening now, but from roots. And the roots of the problem in West Asia, I don't say Middle East, because what is it middle to? It's very Eurocentric. So who created the problem in West Asia? It's the United Kingdom. It's the Balfour Declaration, right? Because before there was this promise to make a homeland for the Jews of the world, there was that, and then there was the actual creation of this state out of another state that was supposed to respect the views of the inhabitants of the state, but now the inhabitants are being wiped out and have been being wiped out ever since 1948. Right. So now once we understand that, then we have to also understand that every U.S. president since then has been complicit in this problem. This is not just a Trump problem. This is a UK problem that has been foisted on the world. But that's not the only UK problem that has been foisted on the world, because you've got Kashmir sitting right there, right? Mm-hmm. You've got Western Sahara sitting over there. And so you've got all of these problems that are leftovers from the colonial period that was carried out not just by the UK and not mm-hmm. just by Western Europe, but the US as well, because right. the US was ultimate guarantor that the colonial period would last for as long as it could. And then when it couldn't last any longer, then the neo-colonial period would last. And when the neo-colonial, well, we're still in a neo-colonial world, and that's, you know, the whole purpose of BRICS. So now, I would hope that people would use this chaos. I always said, my observation was that the U.S. was creating chaos so that the U.S. could take advantage of the chaos. So my formulation is, he who has a plan in the midst of chaos will win. And so you create the chaos, and then you implement your plan. And of course, your plan, you make your plan, work your plan, and your plan will work for you, right? And so that's basically the way it is and the way it's been, except that we don't have enough people. This is why your East meets West is so important, because we don't have enough people who are aware that there is even a plan. So now, by the cross-fertilization that occurs because Tara and Olga get together every week or however often you get together, and you actually are peeling away the curtain, and you're allowing people to see outside of that window, and they can see outside, and they can see, hey, that's not like the picture that's drawn on the window. Right. Your show is very important.
Thank you so much. And Cynthia, really, once you dive into, once you look attentively into the Epstein files, we would be more than happy to have you on our show once again to bring our viewers what you found out there. Honestly,
I did have one final question before we wrap up. It's a serious one, but I just think it needs to be said, because people right now, there's been a lot of fear in the media, because of course governments run really well when people are scared, right? They stay in line because they don't want to move. They kind of are almost frozen in that sense. And there's not a lot of anti-war movement right now happening in the US or in Europe. What is your thought about nuclear war? There was a big push in media about a limited nuclear war. They used to say, oh, you can have a limited nuclear war. You can have these smaller thermonuclear war. And there's no such thing as a limited nuclear war. So I just wanted, do you feel like something is going to happen? I've been hearing that something is going to happen on Easter Sunday. It's coming from that aggressive country, blue and white country, and I won't say the name, but on Easter Sunday, they're expecting something big to happen. Hopefully not on that Christian holiday. I hope not. But what is your thoughts? What are we heading towards? Are we heading towards nuclear war?
Well, the short answer to your question is, again, we're headed to whatever the donors of Donald Trump, whatever they want, that's where we're headed. And so if they're not afraid, because they've already built their bunkers, so they're not afraid of a nuclear catastrophe. And if that's what they want, Donald Trump is going to give it to them. But also, I want to push back a little bit on this idea of nuclear war, as if that's a singular moment that's distinguishable from what we've been experiencing all along. because we've got depleted uranium that's in all of the munitions that the United States uses. And as a result of that, people are suffering from the nuclear exposure already. The depleted uranium, I traveled to Iraq with a delegation, and we all came back sick. We were there for 2 weeks, long enough to get this ingested into our systems, and we all went back home sick because the United States dropped the depleted uranium there. Of course, we know that in Pakistan, they've dropped it. They dropped it in Yemen. And the Yemenis tell me that they're already experiencing health effects from the nuclear explosion explosions. So, the depleted uranium, I'm saying the exposure. Mm-hmm. So what I want to say is that we cannot overlook the fact that people are already suffering from radiation exposure because of the illegality, criminal behavior of the United States.
In the former Yugoslavia, it was the same thing. So it may be the nuclear war, like, it's not a limited nuclear war. It's like on a lower level of depleted uranium, which is already going on. So maybe we just don't know, and it's already being used. That's the point. I mean, it's not, the nuclear war is not just throwing a bomb. Now it's just on a bit different level carried out. So unfortunately, that's what I'm scared of. That may be the case.
Yeah.
Maybe it's already going on.
So this has been a fascinating discussion, and I mean, we could go on for hours, but it's your birthday, and you need to have some fun. So we'll let you go to that. Yes, you need to enjoy that. So I wanted to say for our audience, how can they find you? When is your podcast coming out? All of that.
They can always find me on X. I'm on X, and I'm on Telegram. Actually, I'm on Telegram 24/7. And I try to be accessible on X as well. I just found out they had a chat on X. So you can find me, Cynthia McKinney, on Telegram. You can find me, Cynthia McKinney, on X.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and to our viewers, please also send us your questions that maybe you want to address to Tara or myself. We would be more than happy to answer them as well.
Yeah, and thank you so much to Cynthia. That was an amazing discussion. And also to our new viewers who have just subscribed, we're going to try to bring you weekly content as well as clips as well as other things. Please do feel free to DM us, and we're going to get Olga on X. I know she's resisting, but we're going to get you there. You can ask her and questions as well. And we'll be doing some more provocative shows. We have another amazing guest coming next week. And so take care out there. And thank you again to all those who took up for me on social media when I was being attacked this weekend. Let's hope that we can keep free speech alive and Tucker Carlson out of prison and all of those that are trying to tell the truth.
Okay, so see you here in a week or so, right? Bye-bye, stay in touch.